Hi, I'm Om Malik from True Ventures. I am panicked about how we underestimate the power of technology and its impact on our future.
Hello, how are you?
You are Knut Jensen.
Yes, I am, and you're Howard Lindzen.
Yes, whiter than white, gray-haired, tall, a lot of work done. You never sent me the name of your doctor to clean up my skin.
Oh, I didn't, did I? Mm-hmm. No, yeah, everything's turning white on me, even my hair.
You're a good spokesman for whoever your skin doctor is.
Completely spaced it. I will send it.
Well, you don't want me to look as good as you? I got marks all over me.
No, I want you to look as good as you possibly can, Howard.
Well, welcome. We're going to get right to today's guest, because I've spent enough time with you over the last week in the office that we're caught up.
Yep.
And who cares if other people are caught up? Anyways, my guest is a good friend, smarty pants, Om Malik, at Om. Om is a technologist, let's say. He worries about the future, thinks about the future, invests in the future, talks about the future. And I corralled him because what's more important than talking about the future, especially when the current situation is bleak as fuck. And there's a tech crash, valuations are coming down. I don't think there's a panic. This is just literally the end of an era. And we could whine about it, or we could look past it and figure out where technology is going next. And that's what I need to do. Because what worked for me the last 12 years, I don't think will work going forward. Now, Om kind of was on this path about 4 or 5 years ago. He was just fed up with centralized Facebook and Twitter and has been quietly settling into a post-COVID life in San Francisco. And Om was a partner at True Ventures, started a couple media companies, and now writes, thankfully, back again on his blog. But again, follow him at Om. So let's get Om on. Om!
That was a very generous introduction, Howard. Great to talk to you again. Are you really tall? That's the most important question.
Knut is 6'6".
But you're not 6'6".
I'm almost 6 feet. People think I'm 6'1", but I'm not actually quite 6 feet. I have a 1 foot torso and 5 feet legs. And luckily my daughter got that same body. On a woman, it looks good. On a guy, I just look like a turkey.
So you're like the Phoenix version of Cheryl Teagues.
I am. I'm like the ugly Cheryl Teagues. By the way, you hung out with me, so you do know what I look like. I saw you in San Francisco not too long ago. But are you okay there? You've been drinking again?
No.
So we got you. We had you on early when it was dystopian. We had a great chat. I'll link to it about what was going to happen. Right? We got the things that were necessary for the next pandemic. We've got Zoom. We've got Slack. We've got centralized communication up the yin yang. We have DoorDashes. We've got everything. So for the next COVID, we're set. But now COVID is over. The world now has to align to new technologies, and we're going to start seeing all the stuff that we didn't know was getting built, or we didn't know we were being spied on or a part of, or what all these chips can do and what all these monitors can do. So let's dig into that, because you were blowing my mind when we were chatting last time about what should we be thinking about when we think about technology now?
Yeah. So first of all, it's good to be back and talking to you.
I know, it is good.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll just try and do a little table setting for you and your listeners, right? There is a lot of your framework of thinking and the people who follow you very closely. A lot of it is driven by valuation of things.
Yes.
Right? Like, say, you know, stock markets, you know, basically are all about valuation.
Mm-hmm.
I think valuation and value of something at times can come together, but most of the time they're decoupled.
Correct.
That's my way of thinking about technology and everything in general. So I look for the value. If you look at what's going on in the market, the so-called pandemic stocks are suddenly out of fashion, right? That is assuming that Zoom is less valuable. We are not using Zoom. We are not ordering on DoorDash. We are not, you know, using, you know, full disclosure, I'm a stockholder in Peloton like Drew. You know, you stop using the exercise bikes or you stop using Slack. And none of that is true. The value of those things is still intact. When I came on board last time, I talked about the pandemic was a dry run for the future where we would need on-demand delivery. We would need more video communications. We would need more connectivity and more interaction amongst each other using online. That core thesis has not changed. It has only solidified. Except for now, you know, as is human nature, we like to think that we can go back to what it was. We can never go back to what it was. You know, we've already moved to the new future. We just are resistant to admitting that we are into the new reality. And that's why I think these things which have been built over last 2 to 3 years and have become part of our life have become core values.
Correct. Right?
Core value proposition of Zoom is not going away. Correct. Maybe something new like Zoom may come, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying Zoom is forever. You know, no search engine is forever. No social network is forever. No technology is forever. A better version of something is always around the corner. That is the core truth of Silicon Valley.
Correct. Right?
We always get distracted by that. And right now, we have the world which is sort of in a turmoil. Like, you know, the valuations are in a turmoil. People are panicked about their holdings. But the way I think about it is this is nothing new. 2000, 2001, the world was in panic. The valuations were, you know, nosediving. And fast forward to today, technology is bigger, bolder, more impactful,
correct,
and more pervasive in our life. We have created $5 trillion plus companies in 12 years. Never before that has happened. And it is after a big crash. And that is because there is inherent value in technology. I think we often, you know, so those, once you decouple valuation and value, you can start to see where we are headed.
Correct.
And from that standpoint, when I look out into the future, I am as excited about tech today that I was when I started writing about it, when I started writing about the internet in the very early days, Web 2.0, and now. And I'm even more excited now because there is so many unknowns. You know, for last 12 years or so, since 2010, we have become very accustomed to the knowns in the technology world. And the knowns were mobility, the iPhone, the Android, the social platforms like Facebook and Twitter. Those are the knowns. And we got so accustomed to them that we started to kind of, you know, find ways to, you know, project based on those knowns. And now, I think we are in an unknown time, whereas a lot of things we are not clear about, and that's what makes technology very exciting.
Correct, because stuff's getting built and we're not reading about it. So let's go there. What has been happening in the background? What? Because this is the cool shit.
So this is my core belief that we are coming to the end of what is being a two-dimensional, a very flat information interface. You can call it a browser, you can call it an app. You know, we have primarily been interacting with data and information using two-dimensional interfaces. I think going forward, you know, we are going to be interacting with data and information in essentially in a dimensional interface, which will be three-dimensional interface. I'm not saying it is VR or AR. It is the idea of how we interact with information is going to be very different. And that is pretty much, you know, obvious if you look at some of the things which have been happening lately. Let me give you an example. The most important product in my mind, which came out like, you know, almost 2 years ago, was the Apple M1 chip. It actually showed you what could be done if you created a specialized computing chip, which had a lot of GPU and a lot of neural network capabilities. But it was a taste.
Right. The consumer just says, okay, computer's faster. But as a geek, you dove in and the M1 chip is a game changer.
Yeah. And that's when you realize, like, okay, wait a minute. There is something bigger going on here. Like, they took what was essentially an approach finessed inside their iPhone and brought it to their computer. And then came the M1 Studio, which is their desktop, which is about, I don't know, so is it 6 months now already?
Yeah.
Something like that, right? And you look at M1 Studio Ultra Mac, Ultra, whatever it is, and you look at that, and that thing cost about $6,000 to $8,000, depending on the configuration. And it is 25% the capacity of the original IBM Watson supercomputer, right? And I'm just like saying, whoa, wait a minute, guys, this is a big deal. But in that machine, the emphasis was on GPUs and the neural engines, right? Like, they talked a lot about that in their presentations. They talked about GPU. And that's when you start to say, hang on a minute, if this thing is today, it is that powerful. Now, you fast forward 5 to 10 years, something like this, just, you know, following the plain old Moore's law, this thing would have so much compute, GPU, and, you know, neural capabilities that we can actually start to think what it can do with all kinds of inputs, not just the text inputs or the mouse inputs. It can start to make use of the voice in a more effective way. Mm-hmm. It can use microphones to create, you know, maps of our surroundings and create an augmented reality model. It can use the cameras on our computers to create depth maps, and kind of you start to see, oh, it would not be very long, with that much power, we could have things like, you know, light field, you know, monitors. We could have holographic displays. We could have new kinds of interaction with our machines, which are very different than just the way we interact with things today. And I look at that, and that's a stage, setting up a stage for a more dimensional, a 3D dimension information interaction layer. And I think that is so exciting.
And that's exciting too, because the kids today are ready for it. They're growing up with an iPhone first. So we're still not there, is what you were explaining to me.
Right. I think look at all the 5-year-olds today and the 3-year-olds today. They don't think type on keyboard first or mouse first. They talk to Alexa. They talk to Siri. They touch their devices. They swipe. They do gestures. They are the real inheritors of the future. And they are getting trained on a new way of computing, new way of interacting with information. And I think that is the real story. I think going forward, we're going to find ourselves creating new things and new objects for that reality. You know, sadly, like, if you're a middle-aged white guy...
Yeah, like me. Like, I'm so fucked. You're telling me this, and
you are actually a middle-aged old guy.
Right. Thanks for clarifying. Let me go pee. You just reminded me that I have to go pee, but... I'm so fucked, but this is fun, so keep going. Like, I'm so fucked because I don't use the computer the way it should be used.
So if you look at, you know, what is happening, right? Like, you have a guy like Mark Zuckerberg talking about Metaverse. Essentially, Metaverse is his way of creating an identity and authentication layer for this new 3D interface. And that's the only way he can explain it, is through VR. And using Oculus and stuff like that. But in reality, it's way bigger than that.
Correct.
It's way bigger. And the kids' version of the future is going to be very different. What we are seeing is the building blocks are being put in place. The building blocks are always semiconductors and the networks and the network layer technologies. And those are all in coming together. Whether it is the, you know, the post 5G reality, whether it is like more capabilities in our compute. I think people have still not understood how big a deal the M1 chip and M1 studio type devices from Apple really are, because they're pointing us to what the future might become.
Well, and they're 6K. So as cheap, as much as everybody has a laptop now, Apple, or your company gives you, if you're in tech, company gives you a laptop, giving you a $6,000 machine, we're still 4 or 5 years away, probably.
Boss, you remember there was a time when like a smartphone...
Texas Instrument with the CD-ROM was $6,000.
Yeah, and there was a time when the iPhone cost so much money. And now you can get an Android phone, which is as powerful as iPhone 10 for like $100 or $50.
It's just unbelievable. Exactly. A sandwich costs more. So it's coming. So that helps me. So your skill and gift to humanity is that you're willing to, you can explain it to neophytes like Knut and I. We need people like you explaining and understanding the tech in the future. Were you a geek? Just flashing back quick, I can't remember, because you were a chemist or you did chemistry.
I did chemistry in college. I am a self-taught geek who asked a lot of questions.
And do you think writing is, because I think it's your writing and your ability to deal with community allows you, you can live 10 years ahead, but you know the rest of the world's not there. So is it the writing that helps you understand where this is going?
Talking to a lot of smart people helps me understand where all this is going.
Good point.
I think writing is just a way to make sense of what I'm learning. But I'm learning from people way smarter than I am. And yeah. I will never be in their league. What I do like to do is talk to people who are completely different from each other, right? So if I learn something about semiconductors, I then know how to correlate it with the people from the network world and then from the software world. And, you know, I don't think of things like NFT as a financial grift. I think of it as, what could this become from a technology standpoint?
Yeah, for me,
why would it matter in the future? Would it matter? Right, like NFT type technologies, we kind of get so attached to the labels, we forget what they actually signify, right?
Correct.
People basically said, we are investing in the cloud instead of thinking about cloud is just a way of doing business logic. And like, what is the impact? Like, you know, I used to do a conference called Structure. Basically, that was my biggest takeaway from that conference was that everybody is so fixated on the label, but they never really think about the actual, you know, the why of something.
Yeah, so when I think of Web3 or crypto and then NFTs, here's what I think, because I'm getting into it. I'm not a rabbit hole person, I'm a trend follower, so it needs to have enough people using, and we're still not even close, because I am still believing it's too much the Wild West, and I don't like having my money gone. So it's still way early. But when I think of this, if I'm a 5-year-old that's swiping, their first wallet won't be a leather wallet with a debit card. Their first wallet will be a digital wallet with Dogecoin or whatever, something somewhat stable in the 10 cents to a dollar thing where they can have $100. It's a better version of PayPal. The old people will say it's volatile. The new kids will say, well, I converted my $100 that my grandma gave me into Dogecoin, and now I spend that simply through my wallet by visiting sites, right? It's way easier than PayPal and Venmo, even though PayPal and Venmo are there. That's why I see digital wallets, and we're not even close, but that's where it's going.
I think this is where I remove the financial aspect completely from this thought process.
Okay.
You know, like everybody else, I have a MetaMask and I have a Coinbase and, you know, blah, 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 right?
But you're not everybody. Trust me. I have a MetaMask, but I don't use it. I have a Coinbase account, but I don't really use it.
Like in my universe, right? Like it, which is technology, right?
Yep.
So for masses, the wallet, the MetaMask of the future would actually come from Apple.
Correct.
Right?
Or Android.
And that would allow people to communicate with things. Like the next version of App Store is not going to be an App Store. It will be something like a wallet. That's the identity layer that allows you to buy and more importantly, authenticate yourself.
Correct.
Forget the buying. Authentication is more important in the future than it has been.
Awesome.
Because we are going from what has been a more human scale technology to a network scale technology. What that means is there is going to be more deep fakes, more fake news, more crap in the world, right?
Just correct.
Nature. So how do you identify what is real, what is not real? So the wallets become the authentication aspect of this new future. This new future where everything doesn't go to Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. It goes to smaller things which can be sustained by a 500,000 people or 1,000,000 people or maybe 10 million people. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Or maybe 500 people, right? Mm-hmm. Sort of like how there are apps which exist on their own as like, you know, units of like for 500 people, for 10,000 people. Mm-hmm. You know, I love this app called Glass, which is a photo app. It's the anti-Instagram. It's not about the biggest scale. It's not about the biggest number of followers. It's about the best photos which people talk about. That's it.
That's cool.
Right? And that can exist in this future more effectively by us transacting to pay for it, for things like that. I mean, or more importantly, being authentic on those platforms with a real identity.
Yeah, you're not after, the art is, you're not after followers, you're after joy and passion and curation and the best. And that's where we're headed. That's what NFTs and digital money mean to me. Interesting that you say it's Apple. So isn't that something that scares you? Or what do you mean by Apple? Because if we don't like them now, I like them. But if the government's worried about them now, is that more power to them if they become your wallet or less?
Of all the big companies out there, I trust them more than anybody else. I mean, I don't trust them completely, but you know, we are only one Tim Cook away from things falling apart there. That's the key thing, just to be clear.
Yep.
So from my standpoint, somebody I do not trust Facebook to do this right or even Google to do this right.
So that's interesting. So very anti-fragile there. If Tim Cook, that would send markets probably into disarray. At least the people like yourself who are worried about what would come next, because there's a lot of responsibility to Apple because they have a phone in everybody's hand. The authentication layer and the disappearance of the App Store, they're the closest to being that trusted layer for this next universe or this next network meets chips, meets money, whatever, where it meets religion, meets all this stuff. Because to me, all this stuff is just religion wrapped in money. It's just there could be thousands of these shit coins. That's just that's like saying there's 1,000 religions.
Yeah.
They don't all need to have all the money. They just need to have a big enough audience to support themselves.
I'd be interesting to see how government handled this, to be candid.
Yeah.
So if Apple offers me a wallet on their device to set up my identity, to interact with things across the new network, the new reality, right? For that, I have to use an Apple device and I pay Apple to use their wallet because they're doing authentication and identity for me.
Right.
How can that be a monopoly? I am choosing to use their wallet, not them.
Right.
Right? Because I choose to use their phone, which makes the wallet much more tightly integrated on their phone or their AR platform or whatever you want to call it in the future. Right.
Right. It's true. The wallet actually frees them from being called a monopoly because the wallet can be held anywhere.
Look, there is a reason why they are pretty okay to let go of the App Store monopoly.
Because they're thinking
the clock's
about it. Clock's ticking.
Dude, the Washington, D.C. is always retroactive in its actions.
Yeah.
They're going after Facebook and Google long after, you know, they've collected all the data, they've built all the databases, they've built all the profiles, they've built the engine to basically keep minting money on top of it.
Right.
So anyway, I think, you know, I have, if the government needs to do something, they need to be pretty imaginative as to like where the future is going to be. All their, you know, the regulation has to be where we are headed, not where we have been. Sadly, all our laws are written by where we have been. That said, I can choose, MetaMask or whomever, but if it's easier to use my wallet on iPhone, why won't I use it?
Oh, I can't wait. Right. Because I don't want to use MetaMask. I just don't. And I want to be able to, hopefully, I see a world where Apple insures me up to a certain amount if I hold my money. And that's an advantage that I need. Otherwise, everything's the Wild West, and I'm back in the Rocky Mountains in a stagecoach with my gold. Like, that's the way I still see Web3, is Howard's out there, you know, in his stagecoach, carrying his gold with him, and everybody, that's really what the digital money is right now, is just Howard's naked in a stagecoach with his gold in the back saying, rob me. And I'm not equipped to be in that world, so I still like cash. But to really immerse myself in the next world, we need this identity so I can use an Apple wallet and spend any way I want to spend.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Wild West is a good analogy, because in the Wild West, a lot of people printed their own dollars.
Yep.
Backed by, you know, gold and stuff like that. So, uh-huh. I mean, it's no different that we are going through the same process right now.
We're going through the same process. And this is the opportunity. So it's the, you always have to look at the semiconductors, is what you're saying. The network obviously is set up, and it's going to get faster and deeper and broader. And the software drives that. So software is going to stay important. But the next layer is authentication and what that brings. And the chips will give you the layers of whether it's mapping the room or an immersive screen or not a physical screen.
Think about it this way, right? You're getting, you know, I'm talking to Howard. I don't know if I'm talking to real Howard or not, right? In the future, because it could be a deep fake video. Mm. Of you, and the compute is so good. You have so many podcasts. Your voice is so real. You have so much video. You look exactly, you know, the computers can basically have a conversation with me. I'm thinking I'm talking to you, sending you money to invest in your fund, but it's going somewhere else. It's going to Russia or someplace, right?
Right.
And like, so in that case, what becomes more important is, this is the real Howard. Who does that? Like, who brings that identity? Who brings that layer of authentication and identity, right? Like, how does that happen? So if you think about it, you basically take that need and you can pull it out of whether it's a wallet, the new MetaMask or the NFTs. Like, that's the real thing we need to build to distinguish between the artificial us and the real us, right? And I think that is the most important thing. Even the artificial us would need to be authentication. Okay, this is like my online avatar for Twitter, and it's a real online avatar, not the fake version which is being thrown up, right? Like, I mean, you look at how it happens on email, right? Sometimes you get emails from O'Malik, and it's like some really weird email. It's like, who is this? Om cannot be writing this. How is he? But it looks like I wrote it.
Right.
Right. And so now imagine that at a much higher scale, much more, you know, audiovisual scale. And like, that starts to become a huge problem. And I think that's where we start to see a big challenge and a big opportunity. Look, for whatever he is, Zuckerberg ain't stupid. He's not spending $10 billion a year on Metaverse for any other reason except to lock in this identity and authentication layer. Everything else is just like nonsense. Like, that's what, like, the real value of Facebook is identity. You know, your login, the Facebook login is the most important part of Facebook.
Yeah.
That's the portal to all the data and all the information and all the lock-in. That is it. And I think this Metaverse is just a euphemism for next generation, you know, lock-in for them.
No, and I'm a Google Apple guy, and I really think the Google sign-in with Google has got me. I trust them more than ever I would have trusted sign-in with Twitter. I guess I can sign in with Apple, too. I just never do, other than maybe on TV or on my flat screen at home. So it really is interesting when you think about it that way. It's obvious where Facebook is going, and they have a certain portion of the population. But Apple and Android, luckily, those guys have pushed the envelope for us. So it really is kind of a three-horse race there. Facebook's probably the least trusted of the three, but they have so much data, and they have so many people.
I will also say this, Howard, we are all thinking about it from a very American standpoint.
Yeah, good point.
Right? Like, the world is very different. We have to think in terms of how will China define the future?
Yeah.
I mean, they have more people. They have much more technology. They have, they have a different approach to how they deal with technology. And we are no longer living in the America First world, where American users define how the behaviors of rest of the world happen. Right? Those days are, like, that's the biggest difference. Like, you know, people talk about Silicon Valley ending and all that. No. The American way of
globalization versus deglobalization. That's
now
a good point.
For the longest time, the biggest user base was in the U.S. So that defined how products were built, how products expanded. People copied American apps and, like, you know, American services and American, you know, products, because that's how things happened. Where, like, Silicon Valley itself defined how things were created. But now the world is just much bigger, right? You know, the Indians are doing things differently, and the Chinese are doing things differently, and, you know, and the Russians are going to do things differently, and so will the Africans. And even in Africa, there is just many more variations of how things are going to be done. So I think that one-size-fit-all world of where, like, Facebook is the king may not be true, right?
Good point.
So I think this is why, if you are really thinking about it, who's, like, what is the universal truth in this splintering world? You know, even today, a Coca-Cola in Mexico is the same Coca-Cola in India versus China and in Australia and America, right? The mixture may be a little bit off. Same thing is going to happen around Apple, right? And that is their advantage. My biggest fear for Apple is not the company's ability to create more products. My biggest fear on Apple is, like, what happens if Tim leaves? Because I don't trust the next CEO to have the same ethical standards as he does. You know, again, he has different ethical standards for China versus the U.S. So I'm not going to go there. But, you know, at least with him, we can count on some kind of clarity.
Let's just, for the last part of this chat. So we've talked about the future, how you see the future. And so you're very optimistic. Let's go back to the current reality of the internet in the fighting and the centralization, and it's not going away, and we still participate. And I think obviously you write, so you like taking photos, but you also like social and community, and so you have your Glass community and you have other communities. But where's your take? Now that Twitter is in play and it's up and it's down and it's Musk and it's not, what, when you're following this news, where do you want Twitter to lay with if you had your choice?
I think Twitter is no longer a social networking platform. It's a social media platform where basically people are there to market themselves, market their, you know, people are talking their book on Twitter. Just mm-hmm. like they do on Instagram. No one is there for a community. Those days are gone. Mm-hmm. So now we are at that point where everything has become marketing. Twitter is just that. Mm-hmm. That's it. End of story.
Mm-hmm.
I think the community is still there, but it happens in smaller subsets, in smaller locations. Like I'm part of like 20 different, you know, groups on Telegram and Discord and you know, Slack channels where I talk about photography and, again, semiconductors and stuff like that. You know, there are not more than 20 to 50 people on any of these groups.
Yeah.
And the fidelity of the conversation is pretty extreme and really high, and nobody, you know, even when things get heated, they don't become uncivil. There is a socialization which is happening. There is sociability. The social networks of today are not social networks. They're social.
Correct.
Media broadcast platforms.
Yeah. And so are you a Musk fan or not? Or, like, in the scheme of things, are you a Tesla fan, fan of the products, or how have you seen this evolvement from?
I have a lot of admiration for Elon, the entrepreneur.
Yeah.
I don't think without him, we have the EV revolution we are having. I mean, our president was very happy to talk about EVs and Detroit, you know, easily overlooking Elon's role in bringing EVs to the world. But I look at that and it's like, no, Mr. President. This is the first guy who made a product that even the Germans are forced to buy. Right? When was the German willingly wanted to buy an American car? Answer is never.
Same point is
with the Japanese and same is with the Chinese. They want to buy something American. This is a great, you know, inheritor to the iPhone, the Apple legacy of coming up with a product that people want to buy from America. Anyway, so I have a lot of admiration for that. I really admire his ability to risk it all. But, you know, then there is the other Elon, which is like, oh, my God, can I just tune it out? And that's what I do.
Got it.
Right.
And so who do you read? Like, is there a routine that someone who has to understand what's happening in deeper tech? Like, what's your routine to keep up?
You know, I read a lot of, you know, research, a lot of papers. I read magazines like Nature. I read IEEE Spectrum. I basically just read a lot. What I don't read is anything to do with, you know, the stuff which is going on at, you know, Twitter or Facebook, any of that populist, you know, big technology company stuff, unless it's about semiconductors or new kind of databases or new AI approaches. Their technology, divisions often put out good blog posts and good research. So I kind of pay a lot of attention to that. I really don't read any of the mainstream tech media coverage.
And where are we now? Just to wrap up, how is San Francisco feeling to you in Silicon Valley? Where are we?
It's just like, you know, I hope, you know, people can come and take a look at it on their own. For me, this looks exactly like what it did after 2008 crisis.
Meaning lots of opportunity, people will come back.
It's a little empty. I think there is an opportunity. It's not exactly like the place where everybody comes to start and build companies, but it's still a very relevant, very vibrant part of the overall technology ecosystem.
What about Silicon Valley itself?
Silicon Valley is a state of mind, my brother. It's not a place.
I love that. The last question is, you can walk around New York for a beautiful afternoon with one person, dead or alive. Who does Om choose? Besides me, of course, because, you know, I'm old.
Wow, that's a tough one. Oh, it's from tech or not from tech?
No, it's you. It could be, just want to know who you would. It's a perfect day in New York. You got a couple hours to walk around the city. Who do you, dead or alive, walk around with, pick their brain, talk to?
Does it have to be just one person?
It could be two.
Okay. So if it is New York, I probably would want to spend a day with Bobby De Niro.
Ah.
If it's London, I would probably spend a day with Paul Smith, the fashion designer.
Okay.
And if it's San Francisco, probably with Gabe Kalpert, the manager of San Francisco Giants.
Okay. So Paul Smith, he's pretty much of a wild fashion. You know, so are you like into wilder fashion?
No, I think he's an interesting guy who does his own thing. All three people I mentioned, they all do their own thing and they don't care what the world thinks about them.
And if you come to Phoenix, am I your first call?
Of course.
In Coronado? So I have two places where I'm your first call.
You're the only person I know in Phoenix.
Well, you didn't have to throw me under a bus. There's 6 million people here.
In San Diego, where I know like a shit ton of people, you would be the first call.
Okay. Well, I asked the wrong question.
Right.
All right. Well, I'm glad you're doing well. People are going to love this. I wanted to just talk more about it. It's easy to get bogged down and I'm losing money. I'm making money. It bores me. It bores me. It's just the only thing I know. And the reason I like talking to people like yourself, and it bores you to probably have to explain this stuff to us like laymen, especially Canute. Like Canute's now going to have to ask me 60 questions about this. Usually I have to ask Canute for stuff, so it's better to have someone like you because Canute has no patience for me. Do you enjoy explaining this to people like me?
I
guess you have to. You have to bring people on board.
I love talking to you, Howard. I love talking to anyone who wants to talk to me about interesting things. I am here to learn from other people. And if I can share what I've learned with others, I think that is a blessing.
It really is.
And I'm always so grateful to get your time. I've always enjoyed you as a human being, as a comedian, but more importantly, as a friend.
Wow. Knut.
Wow.
We're ending it. Yep. This is our last podcast.
Wow.
So, all right. Well, you're the man. It really is fun because we had this conversation. I said, well, it's important that now the timing's good to let people know this stuff is just going into a new form of overdrive. And while everybody's been fighting on the internet, the next stuff is at least
exactly.
Next stuff's ready to go.
Look, 2000, and it was 2004 and 2005, the revival started. I don't know how long the dip might be, but the revival is only a little bit of the future away. That's what it really is.
No, we're really close. Yeah. We're really close because Apple's already got a wallet, you know, and it's not a financial crisis. This is just a supply crisis of too much bad. There's just too many companies that have survived that aren't unicorns and we don't need them, right? It's just supply problem right now. And obviously a war and there's supply chain. Like we need to figure out, and you know, we need to figure out this next stuff. But the next level of technology in a network semiconductor world is going to be pretty cool. Yeah.
Howard, you would not get me to say anything about any of the startups. They all deserve to live. They all deserve to thrive. It is hard to be a founder. It is hard to be a successful founder. And oh my God, I wish every one of them luck. Some may not make it, but the efforts would be appreciated.
All right. Beautiful, my man. So we'll talk soon. We'll have you back soon and have a great summer.
Take care, my brother.
K-Nut.
Yes.
The smooth stylings.
You know, every time we hear him, and it's been a while since last, I sit it back and I say, uh-huh, mm-hmm. It's all coming together when he talks.
Because it's his job.
I know, but he does
tech
it so well.
Tech is relentless in the background.
I know.
The chips, the Moore's Law, the chips, all the stuff that we don't want to talk about. Thank God people, the geeks are working. And our the hammers, people build hammers. People build guns. Like, people build stuff that are terrible tools and great tools. But behind the scene, the engineers are just building and Silicon's doing its thing. And people like Ohm are out there explaining it to those that want to listen. Mm-hmm. So anyways, you are listening to Panic with Friends. Knut and I sit down with people like Ohm, but founders, writers, thinkers, venture capitalists, engineers, traders, and trying just to think about the future, talk about investing, and I like to say investing for profit and joy. Just stay a little bit ahead of the curve. You can go to Spotify, Apple, Google, search my name, Howard Lindzen. You will see an alert from my show, Panic with Friends. Subscribe, and you won't have to do anything. You'll get one of these a week. Knut and I coming into your ears. All right. Have a great week, everybody.
Howard Lindzen is the founder and general partner at Social Leverage. All opinions expressed by Howard and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Social Leverage or StockTwits. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for decisions. Guests may maintain positions and securities discussed in this podcast.